You know, the Church of God pretty much has our doctrine set. There's not a lot of controversy about what we believe, and but still, once in a while, different theories will come up, and it seems like they're the same ones over and over again. But I just want to mention one of them, and that is, some people believe that the New Testament might have been written in Hebrew and then translated into Greek. And there's not much evidence of that, but they zero in on the book of Matthew and said probably Matthew was written in Hebrew and then we have it translated into Greek. So what I would like to do is address that, and probably most of you know that 99% of that is false. My title today is this: How Do We Know That Greek Is the Correct Language for the New Testament? How do we know? We were not there, and the New Testament doesn't really point that out specifically. We just know we have it in Greek. But can we prove to some extent that it was originally written in Greek? It was not written in Hebrew and translated into Greek. And so that's what I'm going to attempt to show you today, that we can. So I have about four points. So I've labeled them reason one. Reason one, I said it this way: the one who wrote more of the New Testament than any other author was a Greek native, and that was Luke. Now, the New Testament doesn't say that Luke was a Greek, but the evidence, the internal evidence, is overwhelming. And as a matter of fact, no real Bible scholar even contests that at all. So that fact alone, that one of the principal writers of the New Testament was Greek, says to me that it probably was written in Greek. As a matter of fact, Luke wrote about 28% of the New Testament. 28%. That's more than one quarter of the New Testament was written by one man who was a Greek. And we know from the writing that his Greek was very good because that was his native language. And he actually only wrote two books. He wrote the book with his name, the Gospel of Luke, and then he wrote Acts, which is a history of the New Testament church. So that's a very strong point, that that God chose Luke to write one quarter of the New Testament. So when you think about some of these points, you wonder, why do people get tied up with this strange doctrine that perhaps it was written in Hebrew? Let's turn to Luke, the first chapter, and we're going to see that some proof here. Let's Luke 1, verse 1. Luke 1, verse 1, inasmuch as many have taken in hand to set in order the narrative, those things which have been fulfilled among us, just as those who from the beginning were eyewitnesses and ministers of the word delivered them to us. And it seemed good to me, having had perfect understanding of all things from the very first, to write to you an orderly account, most excellent Theophilus. Why does he address this to the most excellent Theophilus? Well, we don't actually know, but we can think about it, we can reason about it. We know, first of all, we know this is a very odd way of addressing somebody in the church. You know, I never call Mr. Beatty, most excellent Mr. Beatty. He would think I was a nut if I did that. But most of the dictionaries and commentaries agree that Theophilus must have been a government official of some sort. And we have no idea what kind of an official he was, but we know he's Greek because of his name. Theophilus is a Greek name. And what would Theophilus speak? He wouldn't speak Hebrew or Aramaic. Well, he might know Aramaic, I don't know, but we don't know for sure. But Theophilus is a Greek name, and he calls him the most excellent Theophilus. So the point here is, as a official of government, if he was, and we think for sure he was, would he speak Hebrew? No, he would not speak Hebrew. A Greek official, even if they knew Hebrew, they probably wouldn't speak it because it just wasn't a thing to do. They might speak Latin, but probably Greek or Latin. So that first point is an important one, really, because here we have a Greek native writing in his own language, Greek, and he writes one quarter of the New Testament. One quarter of the New Testament. That's a lot. Reason two, I stated this way, the most dynamic New Testament author was the Apostle Paul. And he wrote 13 books and was the designated apostle to the Gentiles. So think of this. Paul wrote somewhere. I have the number here. Paul wrote 23%, 23.5, I think, percent of the New Testament. So he wrote almost a quarter of the New Testament, and he was the apostle to the Gentiles, which it tells us that in Romans 11. So if he wrote to the Gentiles, well, of course he'd write in Hebrew, right? No, of course not. He would write it in Greek. And so again, where do people get this idea that the New Testament was written in Hebrew and then translated into Greek? Or some say Aramaic and translated. We still have the same problem. So let's turn to Romans 11. And read a little bit there. I didn't mention that even though Paul was a Jew, he was called a Hellenized Jew. A Hellenized Jew is one who has accepted Greek culture to a great extent and speaks Greek. Doesn't mean they don't know Hebrew or Aramaic, but they speak Greek, and that's how they get the designation of being a Hellenized Jew. And all commentaries agree that he was a Hellenized Jew. He was from Tarsus, which was a Gentile area at that time. It would be right at the top of the Mediterranean in Turkey. That's where Tarsus is. and the language there was Greek, also some Aramaic. So in Romans 11, we'll start in verse 7. And we'll learn a couple of things here. What then? Paul is talking about the Jews. Israel has not obtained that which it seeks, but the elect have obtained it, and the rest were blinded. Just as it is written, God has given them a spirit of stupor, eyes that they should not see and ears that they should not hear to this very day. And that's true to this very day. The Jews do not understand the New Testament. Skipping down to verse 11, I say then, have they, that is Israel, stumbled that they should fall? Certainly not. But through their fall, to provoke them to jealousy, salvation has come to the Gentiles. Salvation has come to the Gentiles. By what means? By the New Testament. That's how salvation has come to the Gentiles. Of course, you know, not just the writing, but Jesus said that we would testify or be a witness to all the world, all the nations, to the Gentiles. Let's see where I lost my first. Verse 12 says, now, if their fall is riches for the world, and their failure riches for the Gentiles, and their failure riches for the Gentiles, how much more their fullness? For I speak to you Gentiles. Notice this, he says, I speak to you Gentiles. He's a Jew, yes. Hellenized Jew, and he says, I speak to you Gentiles. And that's where his book were directed, to the Gentiles. And he says, I magnify my ministry. So this proves the point as well, that one of the best Jewish writers of the New Testament wrote to the Gentiles. He said his ministry was to the Gentiles. I think that's in chapter 11 as well. Well, the other point I wanted to make here is it says Israel's eyes have been blinded. And so what does that mean? That means that they're going to be blinded until the fullness of the Gentiles come in. And so that blindness is going to be there for a while. And when it will end, we don't know exactly. Verse 25 says, for I do not desire, brethren, that you should be ignorant of this mystery, lest you should be wise in your own opinion, that blindness in part has happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles has come in. So again, that's another reason why the New Testament was written in Greek, because it's meant for the nations, the Greek nation. And Greek was the language of the all around the Mediterranean at that time. Now let's turn to Galatians, the first chapter. Let's begin in chapter 15. But when it pleased God, who separated me from my mother's womb and called me through his grace to reveal his son to me, in me, that I might preach him among the Gentiles. So he says again, he is directed to the Gentiles. That's what God wanted him to do. As I said, he wrote 13 books. And to whom did he write those books? Of course, you know the answer is Gentiles. He wrote to those in Rome, in Corinth, in Galatia, Ephesians, Philippi, Colossae, and Thessalonica. Those were all Greek areas, Greek-speaking people. So there is no doubt that the Apostle Paul preached and wrote and taught the Gentiles. Reason three is the third most prolific writer was John, who also addressed the Gentiles. Now, a lot of people think, well, John was a Jew. How do you know he wrote to Gentiles? Well, there's several reasons. Number one, he had a habit of explaining Hebrew terms. And if you explain a Hebrew term to a Hebrew, he's going to say, what's going on here? Why are you explaining those words to me that I'm so familiar with? So I'd like to take this time to read a short message from Barnes & Noble and from the JFB commentary. They agree with me as well on this. Well, I shouldn't say with me. They agree with others. It has been remarked that I'm quoting from Barnes Notes. It has been remarked there are evidences in the gospel that it was written for the Jews. In this gospel, he's speaking about John's gospel. The author explains words and customs which to a Jew would have needed no explanation. And then he gives a list of a few of those, and I'm going to read those. And then the JFB says, as to the readers of whom it, John, was more immediately designed, that they were Gentiles, we might naturally presume from the lateness of the date. But the multitude of explanations of things familiar to every Jew puts this beyond any question. And so he's saying there that the way he explained things, Jewish terms, in his writing shows he was addressing Gentiles. And I would like to refer, not particularly read, but refer to four of those places. 1 John 38, and Mr. Beatty read these, some of these, where the Hebrew word rabbi is translated and explained. Does a Jew have to be explained to him what the word rabbi means? I mean, really? And in verse 41 of the first chapter, Messiah is translated and explained. Again, does any Jew have to, any observant Jew at least, have to have the word Messiah explained to them? And in John 4, verse 9, it has a statement, for the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. And you tell that to a Jew, you say, oh, really? That's, I didn't know that. Of course, they wouldn't say anything like that, because that was well known by all of Judah, that they had no dealings with the Samaritans. And of course, the reason is that Samaritans were sort of half Jewish and half another race, and so they looked down on them because the Samaritans kind of considered themselves Jews, but the Jews didn't consider them really Jews. And in John 7, verse 4, it has a statement. Now the Jews' Feast of Tabernacles was at hand. And now, again, do you have to explain that to a Jew? Of course not. So that shows that John really had in mind the Greeks. It's not that he completely ignored the Israelites, but he had in mind the Greeks. it could be summarized like this. Jewish feasts are identified by the teachers, by the readers. Let me read that again. The Jewish feasts are identified to the readers, which makes no sense if you're a Jew. Jewish names are translated for the readers. That again makes no sense. Why do you have to translate a Jewish name? Unless you're writing in Greek, of course. And then it says Jewish usages of words are explained to the reader. John also wrote another interesting book, and that's the book of Revelation. So what I would like to do is turn to Revelation, the first chapter. And Revelation 1, verse 1, the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to his servants, things which must shortly take place and sent and signified by his angels to his servant John, who bore witness to the word of God, to the testimony of Jesus Christ, to all things that he saw. So John is seeing all these things in a vision. Then he says, blessed is he who reads and those who hear the words of this prophecy and keep these things which are written in it, for the time is near. Then verse 4 says, John, to the seven churches which are in Asia. Well, Asia is a Gentile area, right? And of course we know of those seven churches, and he writes to those seven churches. Well, I'll just name them. Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamos, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and Laodicea. You're all familiar with those, I'm sure. And all of those are Greek words. They're Greek names. They're Greek cities. They speak Greek. And so is there any question that John had in mind the Greeks as well? So now, listen what we have here now. Luke wrote 27.5%, and some people rounded off 28% of the New Testament. Paul wrote 23.5%, and some rounded off 24%. And John wrote 20.4%. of the New Testament. So we have 71% of the New Testament is directed to Gentiles. And the language of the area was Greek. And of course that was given us by Alexander the Great, as most of you probably know. But just in case, let's turn back to Daniel 7. And I know you've read this before, and Daniel 7 is not a simple book to analyze, and so I'm going to not go over a lot of it, but I'm just going to concentrate on the areas that zero in on Alexander the Great. But I should mention the others as well. Well, I turned over two pages. I'm trying to find the beginning of Daniel 7. Daniel 7, verse 1 says, In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and the vision of his head while he was on his bed. Then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts. And just to jump to the chase, he He mentioned Babylon in verse 4. Then he mentioned the Medo-Persian in verse 5. And in verse 6, let's read verse 6. So after this I looked, and there was another beast, like a leopard, which had on his back four wings of a bird, and the beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. So what I want to emphasize is that dominion was given to it. And some people read, and I tend to agree, that it means that God was somehow involved in Alexander's feat, because it says dominion was given to it. Of course, Alexander thought he did it all himself, but it indicates there that God had a hand in it. Now let's turn to chapter 8, and this is another version of the sort of the same thing. Perhaps one of the reasons is Daniel 7 was written in Aramaic, and Daniel 8 was written in Hebrew. And maybe that's why they doubled up on it. So in Alexander is mentioned in the Daniel 8, verse 5. And as I was considering, suddenly a male goat came from the west across the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. So what does it mean, this beast that looked like a goat, and he went across the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground? Well, that's really a metaphor. It's not saying he literally did that. But Alexander conquered the entire then known world, and he did it so quickly that it was astonishing. Alexander was 20 years old when he started his campaign to conquer the world. And in 13 years, he had done it. He conquered the whole world, and what he did is brought the Greek culture to those nations that he conquered. And that's the way Greek came to the Mediterranean area, the Fertile Crescent, by way of Alexander, because I don't know exactly how he did it, but he instilled the Greek culture and the Greek language in the places that he conquered. Now, mainstream Christianity sort of has the idea that Alexander did this so the Greek language could come to the Jerusalem area, the Mediterranean area, so that God could use the Greek language to save the world. That's what they believe. They actually kind of preach such a thing. But the truth is that that's partly true. God wanted the Greek language to be a witness to the Greek world, not save them at that time, but to be a witness, because Christ said this gospel shall be preached in all the world, and then the end will come. I would like to read you a little bit about what there was a fellow called F.F. Bruce, and I don't think we quote him a lot in the church, but F.F. Bruce was a Scottish scholar, and he was trained in Britain at the University of Manchester, I believe. And he was an exacting scholar. He was amazing. He was really an amazing scholar. He was amazing because he knew so many languages. He knew Greek, Latin, and Hebrew, and Aramaic. He knew all of those languages. He also knew German, French, Spanish, Italian, Dutch, Danish, Sweden. Of course, he knew English. That was his native language. And he knew the Celtic language as well. He wrote 60 books and booklets, hundreds of articles, and 2,000 book reviews. He lived and breathed the Bible. And so I want to read an excerpt of what he wrote. It says, this is from a book called The Books and the Parchments. The language most appropriate for the propagation of this message, the New Testament, would naturally be one that was most widely known throughout the nations. And this language lay ready at hand. It was the Greek language, which at that time when the gospel began to be proclaimed among all the nations was a thoroughly international language, spoken not only around the Aegean shores, but all over the Eastern Mediterranean and other areas also. You know, back then, Greek was kind of like English is now. English is sort of a universal language. I've watched a lot of tennis matches, or I used to. I don't watch that much anymore, but I've watched players from every country in the world, from Serbia, from everywhere. And when they interviewed the tennis player, they always speak English. Sometimes it's a little hard to understand them, but they speak it because they know that, the big money is in the tournaments here in the States. So they learn English. And that's sort of like what Greek was back in that time. Okay, moving on here. Reason four is the collection of New Testament manuscripts that we have. We have nearly 7,000 Greek manuscripts. It's actually 6,900 and something, and it changes all the time. Because we're actually finding manuscripts that we didn't know about years ago. In addition to that, we have 10,000 extra biblical quotes by ancient writers in Greek. Now, how many manuscripts do we have in Hebrew? Zero. None. Not one. Not one that's a real manuscript. I mean, we might have some. We do have some New Testament writings in Hebrew that are known to be translations, but they're not old, they're fairly modern. So I'm a little over time, so I need to conclude here. So you can see that the Greek language is the language that the New Testament should have been translated into. Written in, and God inspired that to be written in Greek. Greek is a more dynamic language than Hebrew, and even Aramaic. It's you can express so many issues and scenarios in Greek that in Hebrew or Aramaic would be rather difficult.